Blog Talk Radio.
Brothers and sisters, welcome to yet another hopefully exciting episode of the PRF Table. I'm one of your hosts, Brother Dunlap. Also joining me or sitting down at the table with me is Brother Feaster and Sister Sanders, who is back with us. So I'll start with you, my husband. How are you doing, sister?
I'm doing good. How's everyone else doing?
We're doing great.
I'm doing great and excellent.
Well, let me tell you where we're at today. Tonight, we are really just joining into the conversation that we've been on for the last couple of weeks. And if you have just joined us for the first time, we are talking about student loan debt. And we're talking about student loan debt in a variety of different ways with a variety of different voices and people from the education field, people from the business world, people who are struggling with debt, people who are parents that have children that are entering in college or in college right now. So we have everybody sitting down at the table talking about this much-needed discussion because, as we've been talking about for several weeks now, debt is one of these problems that we have in our country, not only our country, but it affects our states, it affects our communities, it affects our churches or other religious organizations. But most important structure that it affects is the family structure, whether it's you with one or whether it's you with three. So with that, we're just going to continue on into the conversation. We thank everybody who's been listening with us and sitting down with us for the last couple of weeks. And Brother Feaster, Sister Sanders, last week it was just really, really amazing how much that we had, so much conversation about this topic. And I didn't get a chance to talk to you through the past week, but we had, the last time I looked, it was 720 people, listeners, that listened to that show. And so I can tell you this, from looking at the statistics of how many people actually listen to the show, every week it has been increasing. And from the first time that we started talking about student loan debt, and we give praise to God for it, it has been the first show, I think it was about 400 people. The last show was about 500, or previous show, and now we're up to 700. So, you know, for that many people to be listening to this conversation means that it's actually needed. You want to say something, cousin?
Oh, no, I'm just really excited just to know that people are listening. I'm just excited about that.
You know, and we don't take it lightly. You know, there's a lot of things that we say that people could be doing at 8 o'clock in the evening Eastern Standard Time, and we must also thank all of our listeners on the West Coast, because on the West Coast, from our listeners out in Arizona and California, we thank you as well, because we know it's about 5 o'clock out there, so for people to rush to get off of work and to get back to their houses and to sit and just see what we're going to be talking about tonight, and also to bring something to the table. We don't take it for granted. We thank you so much for taking your time out. So last week was phenomenal. We had so much participation, so many stories that were shared, so many different voices that we actually heard. And that's what PRF is really all about, possessions, resources, and finances. It's about how we help each other, how we help ourselves, how we build each other up, and how we live in a community that we know the type of community God wants us to live in. Sister Paula is not here with us this weekend, but let me just do a short recap. You know, last week she talked about three things, and I really wanted us to really focus on some things that are resourceful for people. One of the things that she said last week was, for those who are going to college or in college, work study is something that can help you. Because we were talking about student loan debt, and we don't want to just focus on the debt. We want to focus on what are some of the resources that we have right at our disposal. And we had a couple callers last week that just gave us some phenomenal resources to use. And actually, we thank them for putting that out there on our Possessions, Resources, and Finances Facebook page. But she talked about the work-study program. She also talked about having a blueprint for your life. or a plan for your life. And Brother Feaster, you remember we talked about that on the first show, about a plan for your life and having an understanding of what it is that you want to do when you go to college.
Right.
And it was amazing last week. One brother talked about that as well, if you remember. He talked about, you know, knowing what you want to do, because knowing what you want to do or having an idea of what you want to do after you exit that life of college also gives you an understanding of where are some resources, and he brought this up, certain organizations that are going to be in your career field that you can actually connect with while you're in college, so that can help you on the financial side. And then the other one, which I thought was phenomenal, which a lot of people may not think really works, but we know it does, is pay as you go. So by paying as you go versus going and automatically saying that I just need to get a student loan because I don't have the money for college, was a thing of stewardship, and I know you were like that, Brother Feaster. So,
oh yeah.
Did y'all have any things else that y'all wanted to bring forward before we just go into tonight's show, Brother Feaster? I'll go to you first as far as a recap for last week or anything that you wanted to bring to the forefront. And the reason I say bring to the forefront is because it's not always about just talking about what we talked about this week and then moving on to another subject. If it's something important that we think the people need to hear and it needs to be repetitive, then we have the freedom on the PRF table to do that. So, Brother Feaster.
No, I really don't have anything new from last week to this week. I'm just excited. This is actually new territory for me, like I said last week, because, you know, being in the military, I don't have this problem or this issue. I don't want to call it a problem. I don't have this issue, but I do have family members that have this situation. I have a daughter about to go to college, so a lot of this is learning for me also and to help others.
And this is what I would argue, Brother Feaster, not argue. I would just point that out. You said that you don't have the problem, but you have family members that do. And if we're living in community like we're supposed to be, really it is our problem. So you really do have that problem if you have family that has that problem. And I'll touch more on that a little bit later. Because I remember you talking about your sister was on last week, if I'm not mistaken, and she's an educator. And she talked about, gave us a whole bunch of different resources. And you talked about some things after the show, if I'm not mistaken, and was hoping that she can come back on this week. But as she was going through her college experience, there were some trials and tribulations regarding student loans or regarding financing right. for college. So it affected you with your sister. And you, I remember you bringing that up last week. So just to throw that out there, and I know sometimes you like to rebut me, but that's okay. We can do that at the PRF table.
No, actually, when you put it that way, you are exactly right. I guess I was looking at it from a direct issue. I don't directly have this problem, but as far as me personally having student loans, however, definitely indirectly I do through my sister and even a couple of my other family members. I know with my sister, I had to coach her through a couple of things on this. So, yes, very, very much the case in that aspect.
And Sister Dia, did you have anything that you wanted to bring? We have a guest that's on the line that is waiting patiently. So if you have something that you wanted to bring before we go there, Sister Dia, the floor is yours.
Yeah, I just I didn't get a chance to get on the show last week after just, you know, transitioning to Kansas. But one of the things that I do like that Paula highlighted was, I mean, you mentioned it again, was just the whole fact of just paying as you go. And I think that is such a good concept. And what I will add, because I'm also in the military as well, is that once you've used your GI Bill and you may still have more schooling left, or maybe you've transferred some of your education benefits to a family member and you decide that you want to go to school after that, but you don't want to do loans, what I found that is going to work for me, because I'm not going to do another student loan, is that I am going to pay as I go. And I sat down with one of the academic advisors at my school and just really began to go over the numbers. And they have really good plans that are cost affordable to that's cost affordable, and they work with you. And you have, you know, they're not looking for you to pay the money up front. You have that choice, but I don't have it like that. So I would have to pay as I go on a payment plan. But I have peace of mind knowing that I'm going to be able to finish my degree and that I'm going to be able to pay for it. And when I graduate, I will not owe anyone. So I think it is such a good plan, and I wish that I had known about it when I was in undergrad and before, even to share with other people, because it is such a blessing to know that schools are not always just trying to take all of your money all up front, because they do value you as a student and also as a customer. So there's a lot of options out there. So I just really want to encourage people, if you're thinking about going to school and you may not have all of the money up front, seek your, you know, seek out the financial aid office or whoever that is at your school and talk to them about a payment plan, because most schools have that, and it's cost, it's affordable for you that you can input in your budget, and you can get your education that you're desiring to have.
Thank you. And let me ask this, Adia, before we go to our guest tonight. You mentioned that they have payment plans for the school that you're at. What does that entail? Is that a payment plan? And I want you to say this for the benefit of those who are listening. Is this about a payment plan that is designed where if you take two classes, they're going to spread it out over the course of that semester, or do they give you extra time? How is that set up from your understanding?
From my understanding, it's spread out over the course of the semester. And as a matter of fact, it's more than that, because I do 9 weeks, and the payment plan, I want to say, is like over 4 months' time. So the nine weeks isn't 4 months. So it's over a course of time that you can make the payment, that you can make the payments and everything, from my understanding.
Okay, very good. So I think it's going to be worth, at least for those who are listening and for those who actually go onto the Facebook page, to maybe if there is some information that you can find online or that you can post so people mm-hmm. can see that this is something that is actually out there. Because we really want to focus on what are the different options that people have in regards to the student loan
okay.
debt, or what are some of the resources that we can bring from our personal experiences or from the experiences of others that will really help any and everybody that's actually out there listening. So thank you so much. We have a caller that we're going to bring onto the line. This is actually somebody I'm going to let Brother Feaster introduce. So let me get her on the line first, calling from, I believe, the great state of Maryland. Is that correct?
Yes.
How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing well. How are you?
We are doing well. So, Brother Friesen, we're going to let you introduce this wonderful guest of ours this evening.
Well, it is my pleasure to introduce to you my cousin who's on the line. I'm going to read her little academic bio. She said that she graduated from the University of Maryland. Spent 9 years working with undecided first-generation transfer and returning students at a public four-year institution. She's an academic advisor, pre-transfer advisor, and coordinator for Student Success Office, and a co-chair of the Regional Conference for Academic Advisors. And one of the reasons why I thought she would be great for tonight's show is she has a lot of insight on what the college student is going through and even some of the resources that are out there, some of the things that the college students can do. She's a very wise young lady, so just like everybody else that come on the show, just put your seatbelts on and pull your pens out of your notepad and be prepared to receive some good information. And her name is Kiana, so I guess I should say that too.
Well, welcome to the show. How are you? Thank you very much for attending. And Brother Feaster, we didn't hear the name because you almost forgot it. So tell it to us one more time.
Kiana Feaster.
Okay.
Kiana's her first name.
All right. Well, Sister Feaster, the floor is all yours.
I just wanted to kind of piggyback on some of the conversation that's already been had in previous sessions. I know that Tamika Bell touched on resources last week, and I think someone else touched on resources. But one of the things that I've seen over time is that it really starts at home. A lot of times, and speaking from my own experience, when I went to college, the idea was you're very smart, you're going to get some money. The problem is that there are a lot of smart people and a lot of people who want money. And because the family did not come together and did not have a plan, and did not know about options, I unfortunately, many people had to learn the hard way. And over the years, I have helped some of my students find other ways to finance their education, such as there are a lot of organizations and companies that are affiliated with different racial, ethnic, religious, cultural, interest, hobby groups who offer scholarship opportunities. So what I've told students over the years is that as hard as you search for sources for your papers, you need to search for free money. A lot of the deadlines for those scholarships are sometimes later in the fiscal year. You have to do some research. But I had a student to go online and Google, she's from Trinidad, and I said, look up scholarships for Trinidadian women. Her family played different military background. I said, look into scholarship opportunities for defenders of certain elements, segments of the military. Just start to think outside the box of finance and college. The other thing that I can say is that in this day and age, with the way the economy is set up, is that starting off at the community college is actually a very good option. A lot of community colleges have gotten a lot of resources because of all the new initiatives that have come soon about the 2025 initiative, the Lumina Foundation, where the goal is to raise the number of college graduates by the year, I believe, 2025, and there are some other deadlines that they have out there as well. So there are resources at the community colleges that may not have trickled down to the four-year schools. So essentially, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
One course at a four-year public institution right now may cost you $1,000. A three-credit course, which is equivalent to one course at a community college, can cost you maybe $300. So thinking about that, a lot of students are taking the option of getting their associate's degree at a two-year institution and then transferring to a four-year school, because if you start at a community college, you're going to pay cheaper rates for your education, and then you can also work towards having raising your GPA and getting involved in activities that could prepare you or make you eligible for some of the transfer scholarships that are also out there, because most of the information that you read about colleges involves information about freshmen. But recently, especially in the last couple of years, the emphasis on putting money and resources out there for transfer students, returning students, and different segments of the population has increased. So the money is out there, and because of all the technology, it's out there to find, but it's just teaching young people and families how to think outside the box.
You know, one of the things I think that you have echoed that we've been talking about or has been mentioned at least once or twice on the show was starting off at a community college. I'm a big fan of the community college system, even though I've never attended one, but I see it from that same perspective that you see it as well, my sister, is because in my community, it's $90 per credit hour at the community college. And there are a number, there's one major four-year institution in the community that has been here, a brick-and-mortar school, as we call it in higher ed. And then there are several online institutions and satellite institutions because I'm near a military base. So students and individuals have a lot of resources or a lot of places to choose from, but you can't beat that $90 per credit hour, and it's a quality education. And I think it's important for us as either educators or parents to be able to tell people it's okay to go to the community college. There is nothing wrong with the community college. Because what we're trying to do is trying to help people stay out of this student loan debt. And it only makes sense that if you can get the same or a similar type of quality education from a four-year institution, from a two-year institution, why not go for it? I'm like Brother Peter. Go ahead.
I think some of the myths about the community colleges have to be debunked to a certain extent. When I was in high school, community college had the reputation of being the 13th grade. And I think that was because of a lack of awareness of all the resources that the community colleges actually offer. The other myth is that by starting off at a two-year school, you're somehow behind in graduation. The reality is that for most majors, your first 2 years, you're basically taking general education requirements to begin with. So in theory, taking your English at another institution for a third of the cost isn't really going to make a big difference in your ability to graduate in a timely manner. Now, for specialized programs, you may need to make that transition sooner, but community colleges also have a lot of things such as there are study abroad programs that you can actually participate in. There are scholarship opportunities. There are honors programs. All of those are things that those types of experiences open up students to be eligible for a lot of the scholarships that the four-year schools are offering.
Right.
So I think the other piece of this is that I didn't know a lot about these options when I went into college. And those of us who are in the system or who have been a part of the system, it's kind of our responsibility to kind of help get this information out to people who may not have access to that information. I've been in the grocery store having a conversation with someone and talking about milk, and she mentions the son is graduating, and my first response is, okay, what school is he thinking about going to? Have you thought about this opportunity? Have you considered this option? And the amount of information that's not shared outside the circle of I'm in higher education, I have a degree, it's astonishing at times.
So my question is, you know, I'm always got these offline questions. My question is, if all this information is out there and people, so granted, JR, I know what you're going to say. You're going to say that's why we have this discussion here at the PRF table. And I think that is a great resource. But how do I, who do not know anything about the PRF table, about to go to college, don't know about all these resources, think I have to get a student loan or, you know, get a grant or anything, but don't know how to do it. How do I find out? How is it accessible, or is it accessible to the average, everyday, you know, pre-college student or even college student in that case?
I mean, the reality is that the information is out there.
That's right.
You know, it's a matter of do people know to look for it? And coming, looking in from the outside of being in higher education and looking out, I've had students who've gotten into college and still couldn't navigate the process because a lot of things are organized in a way that doesn't make sense to the people who actually use the resources. In a lot of instances, and this is my personal opinion, the buck stops at saying we've made the information available, people need to use it. The reality is that there are always obstacles and barriers that prevent people from accessing the information, even knowing it's available. So those of us who know that this cycle exists have to make the effort to spread the word and to get the information out there. And it's not to say that we try to reach everyone, but anyone who's in our grasp, hey, have you heard about this? At my job, I had to go to the community colleges. So I actually met with students and help students figure out other ways to consider financing their education. Hey, I know you want to go to this, you know, four-year institution next semester. If you wait one more semester, still take some of your basic coursework, you're now going to be eligible for a scholarship that you could have a decent chance of getting. And even if you can't get financing for those last 2 years, it's much more realistic to try to find a way to pay for 2 years of school than to try to pay for 4 years.
Right.
And changing the mentality of I guess the idea is that, you know, how do you get people to, if we have, it's the each one teach one, reach one type of philosophy. It's doing shows like this, it's talking to people in the streets, it's talking to people in your community, it's people who are bloggers putting that information on their website. It's using Facebook and social media as a way to share this information. But the core of this is that people have to determine that they need this information. Because with all of this technology, with all this information that's available, someone who wants to go to college, if you go to a financial aid website of my former institution where I used to work, everything you need to know about financial aid and what you need to do is basically there. It's just that people have to take the time and know that they need to go through the steps. And it seems intuitive, but actually it's not, because applying for college is stressful enough. And once you get through that process, the next hurdle is the financial piece. And by the time you get there, sometimes family are just so overwhelmed with all the transitions that are going on, that it could be one of those things that they, if it's not easy, accessible right there in front of them, they may miss out on it, which is why first-year students and most institutions are either required to or encouraged to take a first-year seminar course. And I taught that course for about 10 years. And one of the things that we talked about in that class, besides making the transition from high school to college, was really about financial management, financial planning. These are the places on campus that you need to become familiar with. We have a learning assistance service if you're having trouble with academic difficulties. We have a financial aid office there. When I was in school, I got a financial package that just was not enough. I appealed it, which meant that I and my mother and I had to go in and have a conversation, and she had to bring in documentation. They were able to revise my package. Some people are so put off by the original no, they didn't realize that appealing is a part of the process. No guarantee, but at least you get to learn about other opportunities that may be out there that you may not have been aware of.
Right, right. Well, we got one caller that's been waiting patiently on the line. Just a piece of you, hold that thought, and let's see what our caller has on his mind. Caller, last four of 1959, welcome to the PRF table.
Hey, thank you. I mean, you know, part of me says, Brother Nate, when you say, hey, listen, it's cool to go to community college, part of me says, well, let's back up a step, which is what is the purpose of education? And what's the purpose in particular of a college degree? And some people believe a college degree is a place, or college is a place where you acquire knowledge. But many others believe that college is, in fact, a place that you acquire knowledge, and it provides you with a credential that will allow you to elevate yourself economically, your family, your loved ones. It'll allow you to get a job, and you'll have a credential that people will look at and say, that is something that I want in my company, my corporation, what have you. And I think we've gotten confused because now the credential is very watered down. And so I live in Boston, and if you go to Roxbury Community College and are a college graduate from there, your credential isn't worth the piece of paper it's written on. But yet now all of a sudden you're acquiring debt. If you go to DeVry or any of these other, University of Phoenix or any of these other ones that are advertised on TV, that's not worth it. Literally is not worth the piece of paper it's written on. So you actually may or may not have gotten an education, questionable, but you certainly don't have a credential that kind of you believe you're going to get because now I'm a college graduate. So I think that it's not just about how you kind of find the resources and the systems to get through college. It's to really pre-survey, is the credential what you want? Because quite frankly, you can acquire knowledge anywhere. You can acquire knowledge any way. And to spend $40,000, $80,000, or $120,000 with a degree that's not worth the paper it's written on, I'd say you're a fool. And we should identify and call out those who are predatory upon our people and are saying now, oh, you got a college degree, when we all know if you were the hiring agent, you would say, you would look down on that. And it's not to be egotistical, it's not to be ear-centered, but it's just to say, listen, Du Bois and Booker T. Washington had this debate, which is about the talented 10th, and I'm like, not everybody's meant to go to college. Not everybody has to go to college. And let's not fool everybody into, hey, get your college degree from University of Phoenix, when we know now all of a sudden you got $100,000 debt, you don't have anything that anybody values, quite frankly, not even the University of Phoenix, and now all of a sudden where are people stuck? So I would say more about we have to keep in tune with the credentialed society and say get the credential, get the education, don't get me wrong, but get the credential that's going to allow you to pay back that credential that you acquired and or allow you to elevate yourself, your family, your loved ones to an economic position that is not one now who's forever, quite frankly, an economic slave because you now have $100,000 in debt and no ability to pay it off because nobody's going to give you a job. And so I've been too long-winded, but I'd watch the credential and value the credential equally to the education, quite frankly.
Well, so let me ask you this, my brother. I remember growing up, you know, mom said, go to school, get good grades so you can get a job. And in today's society, there's a lot of, especially young individuals as well, that are seeing a lot of their parents and grandparents, you know, especially, you know, aunts and uncles, family members or whatever, people around them, people in their community that are having a hard time, quite frankly, finding employment, because we know unemployment, the unemployment rate is just bananas, right? So how do we encourage, and I'll ask you this, you know, you can chime in on this as well, Sister Feaster, how do we encourage individuals to understanding that, yes, that credential is worth something because it's going to help us get to a job when there's so many people that are unemployed, as well as so many people that are in college. And I could say this from working in higher education. A lot of people are in college today because they were unable to make ends meet, so they were using college education as a way to survive. So how do, you know, what would be either one of your suggestions about how do we navigate that and try to help individuals to understand that it is important about the education and the credential is important. However, the likelihood of getting the job, you know, it may not be there.
Well, I mean, I'd go back and, you know, I'd start kind of with the Trayvon Martin case and our community's reaction. Then I'd go back further and say, and ask a question before I give the answer, my answer, which is, well, how is it that the quote-unquote Vietnamese boat people came into the United States, acquired property, gained education, built businesses, and all of a sudden now are able to employ themselves? And so there's a cultural issue that I think we suffer from, which is, why is it that when we get money, we tend to want to run and spend it in a different community with a business that's not owned by us, that doesn't employ us, that doesn't recycle the dollars? We have the worst recycling of economics of almost any community, except for now the Latino community, of any community in the United States. So those may not seem related, but for me it says we need to actually go back to the place where we now create cooperatives. We actually have co-investment organizations, since the white community in general does not give us money to build businesses, and invest in our own. And then we need to recycle those dollars so we don't actually have an economy that's bigger than the eighth largest country in the world, but yet we spend none of that money within our own community. And I think if we start doing that, we actually will have black businesses that hire black people who understand that they need to spend their money on other black businesses that allow us to create more jobs within our community. So as opposed to being kind of suckling at the economy, suckling for the scraps of the economy, we actually have our own economic system that allows us to employ one another. And then the credential and the education will have value, because you can actually be part of the investment club that we've created with our own community that builds business within our own community, that then lends back to our own community, that buys services from our own community, that creates jobs within our own community. If we continue to rely on kind of the bigger economic system, we're going to forever be enslaved. And the Trayvon Martin reference is, we didn't do anything. The justice system said, this is what we think about the right for a black person, and in this case a young black boy, to stand his ground when being pursued by something, and what has been our response? And that's kind of our economic response, but it's equally powerful as our response has been to this issue. So for me, we have to start with a strong economic base and trust in one another and build our own businesses that allow us to employ one another, so that when so-and-so goes off to such-and-such college to get a degree, they know they can come back to the community and actually get a job and buy a place in the community that's owned by somebody in the community, or rent from somebody who lives in the community, and we start to recycle our dollars. Until we get this economic thing right, I think we're in a real weak position, as has been demonstrated by the most recent case, and worse has been demonstrated by the fact that 312 children in Chicago have been shot by other black people, and we still don't march, we don't care, we don't say a thing, and we just say, wow, that's a real tough situation.
Wow. Let me go ahead and give this to you right now. You can't hear that from all the listeners that's probably listening, but I can do it from the switchboard that we have. So Carla, we thank you for that. We thank you, and hopefully everybody who's listening has picked up on something that has sparked your mind or sparked something within your heart to say, what is it that I can do to help going towards this effort? So, Sister Feaster, how would you balance, or how have you balanced the credential versus education comment that our caller just made?
Looking at it from a different perspective, but a
similar
perspective.
Can I say this real quick, Sister Feaster? I don't know how many times you've listened to the show, but we all don't agree on the show. We respect everybody's opinion, so, you know, you don't have to agree. You know, just say it like you say it, because that's what Brother Feaster, your cousin, does to me every single week. Go ahead.
Well, when I thought about the question, I kind of got into, you know, approaching it from my background. And one of the things that I've always said is that we wait too late to talk to young people about the future. The reality is that when a young person is thinking about going to college and is going to apply, their grades from the 9th, 10th, 11th, and maybe the first one or two semesters of senior year is what a college is going to take into consideration, which means that if someone is not talking to them about life after high school when they're in middle school, they can literally go to high school and make poor decisions that can impact their ability to have the type of options of going to college or having to find work. So my thought is that first thing is that we have to empower young people, and we have to start getting them to view high school as the beginning of their journey to adulthood. We need to start having open dialogues with them about after high school, you're either going to work, you're going to the military, or you're going to go to school. But you have to be an active part of this process. Because I've seen that kids who are invested in the outcome and view what life is going to be like as a result of their decisions and their choices, they are more engaged in the process of maybe I need to do more work to find scholarships and things of that nature. The other thing that I would have to say in terms of balance is that we have to teach people, especially young people, how to plan and understand the concept of transferable skills. Because the one way we thought we were going to live our lives got changed by life events. And so that dream of going to college may have to be deferred. What are you going to do? And as someone who spent my years always testing the waters, one of the things that has helped me, help open doors for me, is not necessarily the fact that I have the credential, is that I actually have the experience. My background is in criminal justice and survey methodology. That has nothing to do with higher education, yet that's the field I worked in for 9-plus years. So if someone wants to be an engineer, that's fine. You can want to be an engineer. Why don't you test the waters? Why don't you get some experience? Do some summer work, internships, externships. Get them out there so they start to develop these relationships and start networking. The problem is by not doing those things, we set our young people up. We get them to the promised land of graduating, and then when the reality of what happens next, there is no money, there is no opportunity, the jobs aren't hiring our community. You know, a part of them is sad, and it can kind of break their spirit, but it also is something that we could have helped prepare them for, which is the reality. So I would say teaching people how to plan, teaching people to be more responsible for their decisions, making them accountable for their actions. I know a lot of times, you know, parents will look up the scholarship opportunities, will do the application for them. No, put them in the driver's seat and teach them how to steer themselves.
That's right. That's good. I experienced – go ahead, Brother.
Well, I was just going to say you know, me and Kiana and my sister that was on last week, we actually sit down and do a lot of brainstorming and talking within our family structure, because there are some people of some of the grandchildren, you know, we're the grandchildren of our generation, of our family, actually. And we sit down and talk about a lot of the things that we did not get from our parents. And a lot of our cousins are sitting around wallowing in the fact, woe is me. But one of the things that me, Kiana, and my sister, Tamika, we do is we sit down and we try to educate. because we didn't get that opportunity growing up. It was after we got out into the real world and began to live and make these mistakes that we learned, and now we're reaching back. We're paying it forward. And that's one of the things that she's very big on, as in, you know, it starts at the home. It starts at the home. If we're not having this conversation at the dinner table, then we are setting our children up not for failure, but probably a hard success.
Mm.
And one of the things that I told my daughter, the reason why I talk to you about a lot of things I talk to you is I don't want you making the same mistakes I did. If you make them, at least you know. So even if I don't know, one of my requirements is still sit down and have the conversation with her. So I can't talk to my daughter about student loans because I've never taken one out with her. But we can sit down and talk about student loans. We can sit down and get online and Google. You know, we can go to the financial aid center. We can go call my cousin Kiana and talk about these things. So, you know, she's always big on it starts at home and it starts at a young age. Majority of the families, this is just my opinion and what I see, majority of the families do not wait to talk about paying for college, not going to college. We talk about going to college in elementary school, but we don't talk about paying for college until around the 11th and a half grade, you know, when it's time to pick that college. Oh, by the way, how are you going to pay for it? Well, why we didn't have this conversation in the third grade when we start talking about you going to college? Why we didn't have start setting some things in line around the sixth grade, you know, when, you know, you still got six more years, and we're talking to sit back a next egg or get your grades up or teach you how to do some research or something like that. One of the things that I'm saying is we wait too late to talk about finance. We don't wait late talking about college. We wait late to talk because everybody's not going to get the academic scholarship. And that's what we always tell our kids. You get good grades, you'll get a scholarship. Well, if everybody's competing for it, let's say everybody got good grades. So now what's the deciding factor? How do you stand out? What else do you got? So I just think that it starts, like she said, it starts at the dinner table, at the home, before the 11th and a half grade.
And let me tell you, I have a daughter that's in college right now, and one of the things that I've really tried to press upon her, especially being an educator, is that you're going to have to do the work. So your comment, Kiana, about teach the kids to drive, we're going to have to make sure we, Brother Feast, to get that posted on the website. We have to teach our kids to drive because I remember last year, she's going to be a sophomore this year, and I remember telling her several months before graduation about some resources. And, you know, this is what I do. And she did not take the initiative or she waited so long. And then the reality hit around this time last year. I got $40,000 for the scholarship, but the tuition is 50-something. There's a gap there. And I'm sure I was perceived, like you were talking about last year, Brother Feaster, as the mean dad. I'm not going into debt for you for something that you could have obtained yourself. And I think until sometimes parents make sure that they help their children to understand that, because if we bail them out, what's going to happen next year? If I would have said, you know what, I'll go ahead and pay the other $6,000, $7,000, whatever it was. If I was to have done that, what's going to be the expectation the following year? The expectation is I'm going to go back to dad, and dad is going to do it. And one of the things that
either
we said
way,
last
week.
Teaching
them something.
How? I said it again?
No, I was just saying either way we're teaching them something, but what are we teaching them?
Right.
I think it's accountability.
Say again?
I think it's responsibility. I think you're teaching them accountability and responsibility because, you know, at the university, when you turn 18, you know, we're not talking to your parents unless there's some extenuating circumstances, some legal document type of stuff. So this is basically saying that bill is going to go in her name. And if she doesn't pay that bill, that's going to affect her credit. So you're teaching her accountability and responsibility and also teaching her the reality. Because, you know, if you don't get a four-year revolving type of scholarship, what happens is a lot of times your first year, you get a lot of scholarships and a little bit of loans. But as you go further along, that ratio of scholarship to loan switches. So now they've got you there. You want to stay there. You've made this connection to the campus. The idea, I believe sometimes, is that you're going to do whatever it takes, a.k.a. take the loans, if you want to stay there and finish what you started. And then the other thing that happens is that in my job, I had to read the applications for people who were trying to come back. And a lot of times people left school because of financial reasons. They got in over their head. And in talking with some of these young people, they never bothered to ask the right questions, and they never reach out for support. A lot of academic advisors know information that can refer you to financial aid, or, you know, you get a good advisor, they can help you look up information. But a lot of times these young people are suffering in silence. I don't know if it's a matter of shame or embarrassment or I told you so because Dad told me to look for scholarship. But especially with a public, any type of institution, when you pay that tuition, you are paying for access to learning assistance, tutoring, access to the financial aid office. You're paying for a lot of resources, and unfortunately, a lot of our young people don't reach out until it's too late. And so now they've left the university. They have this huge bill to pay. They have trouble registering at a community college in the meantime to pay off that large bill, and it just creates this cycle of that is very hard for them to get out of. So I believe what you were doing is teaching her accountability and responsibility, because $1,000-$7,000 bill will open your eyes to a whole new side of life and maybe inspire her or anyone else who's hearing about that to say, hey, maybe I'll take a few minutes and search for a scholarship. Because think about it. If you get a $1,000 scholarship and then say it took you 5 hours to find the scholarship, fill out the applications, get the letter of recommendation, divide that $1,000 by 5 hours, that's how much you made an hour. And considering
that's
what
right.
minimum wage is like, if they think about applying for scholarships as a job they're actually applying for, they're going to get the money on the back end, it kind of is maybe another way to get them to look more into that option.
I like that. And I do agree with y'all. It is definitely a teaching lesson, not just for the sake of teaching, but I understand, especially working in higher education, that this is about real-world experiences. Nobody's going to beg you to come back to their college. They're not going to do it because there's going to be somebody else that's going to take up the slack, and they're not going to be hurting for people to admit. I really like the fact of what you said, and I'm just calling it the scholarship to loan reversal. Because as the years go by, you know, I never thought about that the scholarships go down. But as you were talking, I really kind of understood, or at least in my mind, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I'm thinking the reason that those scholarships are becoming few as you go on throughout your college education is because they're looking to get other students in, and what better way to get them in is by giving them the scholarships. Mm-hmm. So is that an accurate assessment on my part, Sis Kiana?
It is a very accurate assessment. When you see the U.S. News and World Report saying about the best colleges and the best schools, that's based on the profile of the incoming freshman of the fall semester. So if you want the best and the brightest to come to your school so that you can use their SAT, ACT scores and all the other things that they bring to the table to get you into the rankings for the next year so that more qualified students are coming in, it's a great thing to do. Because you start to think, oh, wow, they gave you this money, they love me, they want me there. And a lot of times, again, if you don't have those revolving types of scholarships and you're not actively searching, you will get the first year abundance of money. And one of the things that happens is that you start getting into issues of retention, because there's an issue about the number of students who leave after their first semester after their first year and their second year, because graduation rates are based on the students who were freshmen the fall of a given year, how many of those students graduated after 6 years is typically what those rates are kind of based off of. And so when you lose students who came as freshmen, at a certain part, you start to mess up your graduation rates. So there are a lot of initiatives of trying to improve retention. And in these economic times, sometimes improving retention doesn't always mean giving out more money because there's not a lot of money that's there. So you've probably seen or probably heard of, like, institutions finding, you know, other ways and collaborations and partnerships with other organizations to encourage people and support people. And I think more advisors are becoming a little more well-versed in the financial aid piece. But for the most part, you know, first-year freshmen, fall semester, spring admit students don't fall into that data. They're looking to get those students to come in because if you can say we're ranked number so-and-so, it makes a difference. You also have to remember that when you're talking about out-of-state versus in-state, that's another big issue. You know, at my school, you know, you could pay, if you were in-state, maybe $5,000 a semester. If you were out-of-state, you could be paying somewhere between $15,000 and $20,000 based on whether or not you were living on campus and et cetera. So those out-of-state dollars are really a big issue. So a lot of times, a lot of my students who had to leave were, yeah, I got a lot of money my first year, but I'm out of state. And that amount of loan and scholarship that you're offering my sophomore, junior year are not covering the cost. And so these students have to leave. Another way to kind of encourage students to kind of make better financial decisions about college is to really consider staying in state, because there are a lot of state grants and state scholarships that are available for students if they're going to school in the state, because they're trying to prevent a brain drain where the best of our students are being whisked away by another institution and we're losing that resource in the state.
Wow. Sister D, you've been quiet. Are you just listening or? I think she is. Well, let me throw this out there, too. I was talking to, I have a cousin who works in higher education as well, and he, from what Brother Feaster was saying, y'all kind of had the same position, but he's still working in that position. Since he's not on the line, I won't name the university, but it is a very prestigious university as far as the ranking among private institutions. And it's a four-year school, and he was telling me last weekend, matter of fact, that there was an instance where he was talking to a young lady about financing her college education at this institution. And she was telling him that her parents were looking out taking out a loan for this education. And I will say that the education is about $50,000 a year. The scholarships that this institution provides to students only comes up to about $15,000. They give no more than like $15,000 worth of scholarships per year. So that means you're coming out of your pocket like $37,000. Now, one of the questions that he asked was, where are you going to get this additional $20,000? Now, this was like $20,000 because they already understood how much the institution was going to get and where they would get another financing from. One of the key factors was the child or the young lady's parents wanted her to go to this institution and to major in electrical engineering. The student, the young lady, had a desire to pursue music. That was what her passion was. That's what she wanted to pursue. The sad part of was the parents were going to take out the money so that this child could go to this institution. And my cousin tells me that he was advising them, do you have $100,000? Because that's what you should expect to pay over the next 4 years, providing that the institution gives her that whole whatever the amount that they were going to give her. So it was $100,000 as he was looking at it from that perspective over the next 4 years. And what he did, he explained to her that she should never borrow that much money every single year or this year and then expect to have it next year. And the sad part, again, was that the child's parents wanted her to go to this school, but that's not where she wanted to go.
Right.
So he asked her, if she has to borrow that much money, or if you have to borrow and you can't continue, where are we going to be at? So So the parents were, to make a long story short, the parents were upset with my cousin because my cousin said, since you don't have this money, you don't see where you're going to be able to get the money, it's better for you to go to a, and they have plenty of in-state schools, state schools, state four-year institutions that she could have went to. Why not go to this school? And it goes back to that responsibility as educators, and just like your cousin last week, Brother Feast, was talking about the books. I know we want the students to buy the books from the bookstore because that helps the institution, that helps pay our salaries and all of that. But if you know some students are struggling, you can, why not just tell them, you know what, you really get that book used for about $4 on Amazon versus $80 in the bookstore. You know, so how we educate makes a big difference. The parents were upset with my cousin because they were not understanding, you're supposed to be helping my daughter get to this school. You're supposed to be helping us to reach this goal. And he said, I would rather tell you right now and have you go to another school than to have you back in my office next year or your daughter in my office next year telling her that she cannot come back because the funding is not there, because she doesn't have the money. So it's like, which choice do you make? I was with him. I'd rather you tell me, hey, what are you going to be able to do over the next coming years versus get myself in the debt? Because here's the reality, I think it goes to some of what your point was here, sister. That $20,000 that they were going to borrow, if they can't afford to take out a loan for another $20,000, and we talked about how that will just increase the parents' debt-to-income ratio, well, you're not going to be able to keep doing that. I mean, eventually it's going to catch up with you, and for most people it's probably going to catch up with you next year, especially if everything stays the same in your current financial situation. So the choice was, send them, let the child go somewhere else, or we come back and have the conversation. And if eventually they got it, and eventually they went somewhere else, but I cannot imagine what that would have felt like for that child to come and not be able to come back the following year.
And I've seen that happen far too many times because people did not want to deal with reality. And the problem with reality is that it is what it is. And if you don't deal with it, oh, it will make its presence known in your life. I had a student who wanted to do video gaming, and that's all he wanted to do. But his parents wanted him to be there. There was a school in his neighborhood, in his state, that he wanted to go to, but his parents wanted him to go to this school. This kid is not going to school. He's not performing as well as he could. He's completely disconnected from the process, and I had to have a conversation with him, and I said, adult to adult, you are an adult, and this is your life. This is your transcript. So if you're going to be miserable here, accumulate this debt, put your parents into debt, and then have this legal document, which a transcript is, following you for the rest of your life, that is your decision. I said, however, you also have the choice to decide to follow your own path and take responsibility for the consequences that come from that, at the risk that you might actually be very happy. Your parents may not like your decision, but it's the decision that you can live with and not have to deal with the fact that if you go home right now, your grades are so horrible, I can't guarantee that you won't be dismissed at the end of this semester. So a lot of times it's really having that conversation with the student, and also having conversations with parents in terms of, this is one of those issues about communication. I have parents used to call my line all the time wanting information about the child that they're spending $20,000 a semester for. And my response is, legally, I can't give you any information, but what I can tell you is that everything you want to know about your child's status, your child has that information. And you should consider having a conversation with them so that you all are on the same page. Because what's happening is that I'm getting two sides of the story, and you all need to meet in the middle. But it happens. It happens a lot, and it's unfortunate, but it's one of those moments where I think it can be a turning point for a young person. It can be an actual teaching moment to really say, you're at a crossroads. What do you want to do? And the saddest thing in the world is that for a child who has always been told what to do and how to do it, to not be able to quickly go into, let me think about this, let me make a plan, let me weigh the pros and cons. I've had to do that for young people because, ethically, I could not tell someone to stay and keep accumulating debt when they were making no progress and their spirit was getting broken with each semester of they are struggling through calculus when they cannot math is not their forte.
Right. Brother Fifi, you were trying to jump in?
Don't worry about me. I'm overwhelmed by stuff that we're not talking about that I'm hearing that really is I'm getting upset. I'm getting upset about the resources that are available but unavailable, and it could be just out of ignorance or not putting in the extra effort to find it. I'm upset about us as parents not educating our children or having a conversation with our children. I'm upset about, you know, parents trying to live their life out through their kids. I mean, the child wants to do one thing, the parents want to do something else, but you're going to pay for their college education. Well, how far is that child going to go? If this is not what I want to do and you're paying for it, then I have no desire to continue. I have no desire for the better grade. There's nothing motivating me there but the pleasure of taking care of but the pleasure of being what my parents want me to be. But through my whole life, it's been said, once you get 18, you're grown and on your own. Well, what am I doing? Am I pleasing my parents, or am I trying to become myself and trying to come into my own? And these are problems that, you know, these are the kids that come into the military. These are the soldiers that I see every day, day in and day out, that have not had to make a decision for 16, 17 years, and now all of a sudden you're in the military, and one of the first things you have to do is start making decisions for yourself. You know, and these are things that, I mean, it goes back to, like I said earlier, these are conversations that we need to have at the dinner table. We owe that to our children. We owe that to our community that we have these conversations. We are obligated to give them that information. And if we don't know, then we have to go out and get it. If me as a parent don't know, then it's my job to go out there and get it. In my case, I will go with my daughter so that we can learn together. Because I know I don't know about all the scholarships.
For Brother Fisa, let me throw this at, you know, I think a lot of us who are speaking from an educated point of view. Myself, you, the callers who called in last week on the show, Sister Kiana, we're all speaking from an educated point of view. So I do think that it is worth having a little bit, and I'm not pointing as directly as you, Brother Feaster, but I think it is worth having a little bit of, I don't know if empathy is the right word. Let's say having a little bit of understanding that everybody's not educated in these ways. And I say that because if people are not educated, you know, you can't expect somebody to teach something that they haven't been exposed to or they haven't gone through personally or they haven't lived through. I know how to go online and go and search and do all these different things, but there are some people that just don't know how to do them. I think one of the greatest things that we can do is make information accessible. The previous caller or one of the callers mentioned tonight was talking about predatory institutions. So for somebody who has never heard what's been talked about on this show, may decide to go to the University of Phoenix and say, oh, this is the greatest thing, because they may accept them just like that. Were they educated? No. Did they go and look up something and find something and think that this was the best choice? Yes. So I think it's worth us having some of these conversations out loud about the different resources that are out there. And what I was doing, as everybody's been talking tonight, I've just been really thinking about what are the resources that we're talking about. And one of the resources that I, at least for me, that I've heard so constantly as a thread was that we have to be honest with people. Honesty is a very great resource. That's what my cousin was talking about. That's what Sister Feaster was mentioning. You know, we have to be honest with the students. We have to be honest with parents, those of us who are actually in higher education especially. We have to be honest in the community. You know, I think about in the church. When there is somebody that is getting ready to go off to college, in the church, we praise God about that. Stand up. Little Brother Dunlap is about to go off to, you know, Temple University, and we're happy, right? But nobody in that church is asking a question, how are they going to make it financially? And some of the sad commentary is this. Right, they're not going to say it out loud, but they may be thinking it, but they're not saying it out loud. So whatever type of community, that's why I just used the word community, whatever type of community that we're engaged in, we have to be moral agents enough to be able to say, let me go ahead and express or at least ask that question to that parent. Well, Reverend Dunlap, y'all good on financing for all 4 years? You know, so maybe Reverend Dunlap needs to hear and not think, well, you know what, God's going to take care of it. I'm just going to send my child off and God's going to take care of it. God may do it. But if God doesn't do it for whatever reason, what are you going to be able to say? You can't come back and say, well, it wasn't in God's plan. That's a cop-out easy answer. You know, that's the coward answer. Well, it wasn't in God's plan. You can't use that. I think you can't use that. You can use whatever you want. But my whole point is being honest with those who we are in community with, being honest with parents, those within our family members. You know good and doggone well that Lil Dunlap really was barely making it in high school. Why are we even setting little brother Dunlap up for failure, thinking that he can go to Temple University, out of state, because he liked the programs? I mean, we gotta be real with people. That's one of the greatest resources that I think I have, because, you know, I try to be as real as I possibly can be, even sometimes to a fault. But at least you're not going to be able to say I didn't know. You may not like it at the time, but you're not going to be able to say that I didn't know. So, well, yeah, Sister Kiana, do you have any additional words that you? Well, let me throw one more thing. You had mentioned study abroad, and I thought that was a resource that students can use. And you also mentioned internships. When you said that, I thought about a lot of young people in the area where I grew up in Philadelphia, and even in the community where I live down in the South. There's a lot of students, a lot of people out here that will not go study abroad, because they cannot even conceptualize the fact that I have to leave my own hood. I have to leave my own area. I think you're missing something if you're not willing to travel outside of your own area, especially when it's going to provide or be a resource for helping you through your college education. Same thing with internship.
And I was one of those kids. I was one of those kids. That's my biggest regret. I didn't think I would be able to afford to go abroad. Never took the time to just walk over to the study abroad office and said, listen, I want to go, but I'm afraid. Because had I done that, I would have found out that, number one, there are some programs that cost the same, if not less, than the semester of tuition I was paying at my current institution. There are exchange programs where someone would come to our school, we go to their school, and we pay the same tuition that we would have paid had we been abroad. But because I was so afraid and wasn't willing to ask questions because I felt like I should know, and I went to a predominantly white institution, so there was a level of intimidation that I had to a certain extent, because I didn't speak like a lot of my classmates or colleagues. A lot of times I was the only person who looked like me. So college opened up a world of things to me. But I think getting back into just how do we break that cycle? How do we break that cycle of basically the haves and the people who perceive that they have not? It starts with dialogue. It starts with, as you said, engaging in conversation with the people who are in your community or whatever organization you're part of. It's talking to the person standing next to you. It's like if you see someone, people all the time are posting on Facebook or social media, so-and-so is graduating. It doesn't take anything to say congratulations. What are you thinking about doing afterwards? And really even having a conversation, starting a conversation that way. One of the community colleges that I went to, I used to literally sit in the hallway. I said, I want to be as visible as possible. And I saw people look at my institution's name and run past. And I had to stop people and say, why won't you stop? And it's like, oh, we can't go there. That's, you know, your institution, they don't accept us in X, Y, and Z. And then I hold up my right hand and show my ring. I said, yes, we do. and it starts a dialogue where it says, if I can do it, that means that the possibility exists and you can do it, and really saying, what are your fears? What are you concerned about? And really giving them the support that they need. We have to reach out in the ways that we can.
Yeah, yeah. We have a caller that has called in, so let's take this caller as we get ready to wind down this session of the PRS table. Caller from the last four, 2023. You're at the PRS table. How are you this evening?
Doing well. How are you?
We are doing well. We are doing well. Enlighten us this evening.
Well, I just wanted to make a comment as far as people being willing to go abroad. It's not just the young that need to be educated on that. It's the older individuals as well, because I know plenty of professional people who are in debt as we speak and are struggling to pay off their debt. But I've explained to them programs that you don't even have to leave the country. You just have to leave the state. If you leave your state, they will pay off your debt. You come to work for these people, they will pay off your debt. And you get comparable pay. Benefits through the roof, better than where they are currently, but they still won't move. They still won't go. But you're struggling to pay off your student loans from the degree that you just attained.
Mm-hmm.
But you won't move because these people will make that balance zero and pay you more than what you're earning now. So it's not just the youth that need that education. It's the older
okay.
Individuals as well, because I think it's, you know, everybody gets comfortable in their familiar surroundings, and there's so much more outside of what's familiar. And if you never step outside those boundaries, then you never know how far you can actually go.
Right. That's right.
So it's we have to include everybody with that on that note, as far as going outside and going abroad to get loans repaid, or, you know, all of these different programs that are available. Going abroad doesn't necessarily, in this instance, it doesn't necessarily mean going to another country, but abroad from your state, from your town, it opens up so many doors. That's my comment.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
All right.
So the bottom line is, we just have to be ready to move. Be ready to move and be willing to move. Talk about those fears of moving. And if you do that, hopefully something will open up where individuals will see that you're ready to move. I talk all the time to individuals about not staying in one place. A lot of times people will tell me, Brother Dunlap, you don't let the grass grow up under your feet. And it's not that I'm an individual that doesn't have stability, but sometimes you have to make certain moves. And especially as a minister, you know, following God doesn't mean that you're always going to be in the same location forever. It's just not going to happen like that. So we thank everybody for tuning in with us. I want to give Sister Feast an opportunity to say parting words in respect to tonight's show. And, let you know that you have a seat at the PRF table if you want to come back, and we hope that you do, to help us just continue having this type of dialogue that we're having. So, Sister Feaster.
Thank you very much. I definitely enjoyed this opportunity, and I guess my parting word is communication is key. We can't grow, we can't move forward, and we can't break any strongholds in our life if we're staying silent and not really talking with each other and sharing what we know. This is the issue in terms of, you know, financing, education. It's a conversation that will continue on and on and on. But I guess the takeaway today is that, one, you need to put the person whose education is at stake in the driver's seat and support them and empower them to find ways to finance their education, to find their way in terms of whether they want to go to school or go to work, and support them in learning the process along the way. And once they have done that, then they need to be reminded that it is important that they pay it forward and reach back and help someone else understand and learn from their, you know, from their journey as well. So I guess that will be my ending point. And find free money. It's out there. It's out there.
Well, we do thank you for your closing comments. That you've enlightened us with a whole lot of stuff tonight. I mean, definitely. Like I said, the past two shows, this is all new to me. So, and it's just been enlightening. And thank you, definitely from your perspective, because your perspective is one that a lot of us don't know. You know, you being on the other side of the desk, you being on the other side of the table. So, thank you for your time. Thank you for your comments. And you know, it was a great show. I'm glad to be a part of it also, and I learned a lot, and I'm definitely using this stuff, you know, with my daughter. She prepares to go to college. Darryl, do you have any final words?
Well, we just want you to come back next Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We thank everybody for listening. Tell your friends about it. Tell your family about the conversation that we are having on the PRF table. Go to our Facebook page. We would love to see you just post some comments or questions to help continue the dialogue after the show and throughout the week. Our Facebook page is possessions.resources.finances. And so we thank you and we love you. On behalf of Sister Sanders, Brother Cesar, Sister Paula Brooks, and myself, God bless you and have a wonderful, wonderful evening.